This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawera Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. And here for the last time, at least the last time in this season, I'm joined by Tim Lynch. Welcome, Tim.
Hello, Sam. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Now, we've been all over the Baltic, well, one island mostly, investigating approaches to sustainability and sustainable business. Where are we this time?
So, this is an interview that I had with Trine, who's the head honcho, I suppose we would say, of Green Solutions House on Bornholm, which is a hotel where I stayed. It's a really interesting hotel. They've got solar panels on the roof for power. All the materials that are used in the curtains, on all the fabrics, are about purifying the air. They have algae ponds for cleaning black water and grey water. The kitchen waste gets mulched and used on the vegetable garden. It also gets used for creating biogas. It's been voted in the top 10 of Europe's most environmentally conscious hotels. It's got multiple architecture awards, particularly around the design of the hotel for reducing sort of waste materials in its construction. And it's also had awards for its reduced carbon footprint. It also got an award for the overall best of the past 10 years in Europe as well. So I was fortunate enough to, A, stay there. They put me up, and B, have a chat to Trine about what they're about and what they're trying to achieve.
Hello, my name is Trine Richter, charge of the Green Solution House and two other hotels, actually. So three hotels gathered under the name of Bornholm Hotels. One company today. I merged with two other hotels Green Solution House merged with two other hotels in 2017.
So the first question really to pose to Trine is, how did the hotel get started?
So as Klaus said, in 2000, and actually in 2007, we were 48 people sailing around the island for 48 hours. And the whole idea was kind of, you know, it was a branding workshop. We wanted to see, and it actually worked, to see the island from a different angle. So looking in at the island from the ferry. And we were divided into different kind of groups, and I was in the tourist group. And at that time, and that's another long story, so we jump over that, but I was working for my father-in-law and was supposed to take over his hotels. My background is financial, so it was quite a change for me. It never worked out. But at that time, in 2007, I was representing the tourist sector within the strategy work. And the group I was in, we were seven people there. We came up with the idea of Green Solution House, September 2007. This is a drawing. This is here where the idea comes from. So this is, or was, the shape of the tourism in 2007.
So the next thing on that was really, what's the importance of tourism on the island?
So January and December, the main, actually high season in general, is July and August here at the island. So tourism is the biggest industry at the island. Food and agriculture is also very big. And we have approximately 600,000 overnight stay, approximately, during a year. So we have a lot of summer tourism. in this period. And if I should put some numbers on, it would be 55% during 8-9 weeks. So here we have a lot of tourists, especially in Svaneke, for example. But the meeting industry, and that is global, it'll start in March and it ends, let's say, October. So if we can, the idea was, if we can attract business people, meeting guests, conference guests from all over the world, we can change the pattern so this will flatten out. So we will start to have meeting and conferences here. Then the summer guests will take over and the meeting guests will come again here. So this is also a curve of the employment rate at the island because it's almost the biggest industry. You know, we are fighting against, or with, I would say, agriculture and food production. So that was the main idea. So how can we do this? If we build the Green Solution House, and I have to say the name is good when you're talking about a workshop, and it kind of clinked, but it's not that, you know, easy to say. And the Green Solution House, that's not how we say it here at the island. We just say GHH because people are just, we don't like English words, and why can't we say it in Denmark, in Danish and all this. But when you get come out of the island, even only to Copenhagen, or you come out of Denmark, people know what Green Solution House is. So it works. So, but here at the island, it's not Trine's Hotel, it's GHH. And that goes very well with that. So the idea was, if we think very visionary, like the Frank Gehry Bilbao Museum, you want to go there to see the building also. Of course you want to see all the art there, but you also want to see the building. So the idea with Green Solution was to make the building and the way it operates as interesting as so people want to come and see it. So that was the idea. Sounds easy. At that time, as I said, I was educated in the financial sector, covering risk in currencies and interests. So it's quite a different thing to do. I didn't know anything about sustainability, and I didn't know anything about building processes or anything like that. So just some dates. The end of March 2018, I quit my job. I said to my father-in-law, "So sorry, this will never work out. We have tried to work together for 5 years. We don't have the same, you know, feeling about how to operate a company. I like to trust people." And he had this management of fear, and it just didn't work out. So I left the 2nd of April, 2008. There was a meeting at my father-in-law's hotel just over here, where this one was published. So this is the Bright Green Island strategy. And when we look into it, it goes here, the Green Solution House. And here it just sums up that we want to have a conference center here at the island to make this pattern. This is all we had. And then a PowerPoint presentation. I still have it, actually. And I still have my notebook. I can't throw it out, so it's still there. So the 3rd of April, I was hired of the municipality. So I only have one or 2 days unemployed. And I have to say, I cried the 1st of April. I was just, what am I going to do on this island? I'm from Copenhagen. I never find a job, and a terrible day. But here I was hired to make the first analysis of the Green Solution House, and I did. And I came up with the answer, the conclusion, that if we can make it so interesting, so architects, engineers, builders, entrepreneurs, contractors, etc., would like to come here and see how we have done it, then it's a good idea. If we make an ordinary hotel, if we only can think of that, then don't do it, because we have bedrooms enough, hotel rooms enough here at the island. So we have to do something extra. So the municipality said, "You're very good at doing analysis. Can you do the fundraising? Can you find the investors? Can you find the place to build this?" And I said, "I'd do my very best." So I was hired to develop the idea. There was a very stupid thing from the municipality. They said to me, you are allowed to find investors for a conference center, but not for a hotel. We have enough hotel rooms. But so you have to place the conference center somewhere at the island, find a building venue, and then you just have to build it there. And then you have to make use of all the empty beds around the island. And that's extremely stupid, because if you know anything about conference centers, you have to put the people down in the beds. They have to stay if you are to make money, especially in Denmark where the salary are so high. So if this was an ordinary meeting, this what we are having now, it will cost me 360 kroner because of the salary, etc. So we don't make money on that. You know, just the coffee and the water and the salary for my waiter doesn't make sense. So I met a financial guy on the plane, and he said to me, you have to speak to Kalle. Kalle is the old guy we have here on the wall. Did you notice? He and his wife, you just turn around. He's on the wall. Yeah. He was around 85 when I met him, and he died when he was 95 in 2017. So the last thing he did was actually to sign the contract to buy the two hotels that my father-in-law used to have. He died in 2016, suddenly. So he was 95 there, and he said, I made my best decisions when I was in the middle of the 80s, and now we have to look, you know, far and be visionary, so we bought the hotels. Of course, he signed and I did the work, so we merged the companies. And that was an extremely success for him. You know, he won over my father-in-law. They were fighting, you know, competitive and so on. So unfortunately, he died in June 2017, so... great guy. But I met him in 2009. And at the very first meeting, that was actually here. He had built his hotel through 40 years, four decades. There were different kind of building and architecture here. Let's just be very polite. And I came here and he dreamed of a conference center. So he had a hotel which was built through 40 years. Yeah, actually, he sat like that. And he sat like this and looked at me and he said, my hotel is brilliant. There's no reason for you to renovate anything, refurbish anything. It's brilliant. And you can just build this conference center out there on the field. The venue here is 65,000 square meters. Quite big. Yeah. So he said, you can just... build it out there. The hotel is brilliant. And at the very first meeting, he said to me that I'm in if you are in too, but you have to stay on board.
It's interesting how she inherited, got this place kind of with the instruction of not to do something, but she somehow knew it was the right thing to do and she's gone ahead and done it anyway.
It's exactly one of the things that came across very strongly in the interview, Sam, is that if Trine wants to do something, she tends to do it.
Well, what I want to do is have a music track.
Fantastic.
Well, so let's do that.
Have you heard of Frisian?
No.
Have you heard of psychographic shivers?
I have now.
Okay, so this is the sensation that you have when you are listening to music, the shivers that go down the back of your spine, the raising of the goosebumps. Interestingly, only 50% of the population get it. Now, this particular band we're about to play rates very, very highly on this idea of the Frisian scope, if you will. For me, they're one of the great sort of songwriting combinations of our generation. The combination of Tom York and Johnny Greenwood, I think, is just amazing. So this song is Radiohead and it's Jigsaw Falling Into Place.
Thank you. just as you take my hand, just as you write my number down, just as the drinks arrive, just as they play your favorite songs, your bladder disappears. No longer wind up like a spring before you had too much. Come back and focus again. The walls have been in shape. They got a Cheshire cat grin, all blurring into one. This place is on a mission. Before the night out, before the animal noises, closer get cameras, before you come but home.
Live Aid last night. I think that had that frisson.
it can't not really. certainly did for Freddie, there's no doubting that.
Trent's been talking about this vision of having a green hotel. What does she mean by sustainability, and was she alone in this vision?
Well, this is, you know, this idea becomes really interesting, this idea of collaboration. If you think when you're building a house, you get a bunch of tradies in, and the singular vision is about how do we build this as quickly, efficiently as we can. And obviously those constructs or those constraints still had to be there, but there was also this other level to it, which was trying to achieve something which was new and innovative, and that required the collaboration, and it required her working with sort of multiple stakeholders in a way which would be quite different and unusual in a building context.
Oh, you do it. So never stop. And I tell my board, they're more happy about me now than they were in 2015 when we opened, because we lost so much money. We had a budget, of course, and I knew for sure that the first couple of years I have to build up this. So the market wasn't there. So we lost so much money. And then, but they knew. But this, you know, it's not funny to have a board meeting where you lose money. But it was an investment, and today they are very happy. And now they ask me, what kind of projects do you want to do, Trine? And that's good, because now we make money. We have some very good numbers, one of the best in Denmark. So everything is fine now. But it has been quite a struggle. It took sometime.
A long journey. So yeah. At this stage, so Trine had the financial meaning, so I had to ask her, look, did you do this all on your own?
No, but what I did at the time, I met, and you can say coincidentally, so do you believe in coincidences? I don't know. I met a guy who was one of the leading persons from the Cradle to Cradle philosophy. Do you know that? You have to dig into that. It was quite interesting. But William McDonough and Michael Braungart, a German engineer and American architect, they developed this Cradle to Cradle theory. And to put it very simple, they use the cherry tree as an example. So that's not a waste from a cherry tree. So that is how the nature works. And you have to design new things the same way. So when you design this one, and that's probably a very, very bad example, when I'm tired of this, I have to throw it out. So if a cradle-to-cradle person designed this, they would think, how do I take the ink out? How do I take this little part out here? Because as long as you could disassembly, you design for disassembly, then you can reuse. So when you take the facade here, it's not made by Velux. It's made by... it's also with a V. It's a sister company. Velfac. And you can disassemble everything. So you can take the glass out, you can take the steel out, you can take the aluminium, what is that called? Yeah, you can take everything apart. And as long as you can take it apart, you can reuse everything. So in the new building we have out here, it used to be the entrance, the main entrance, actually, so the buses and the cabs were driving in here, and the parking space was over here. So what the 3XN did, the architects, they combined the building, and then they did the conference facility here. And we ended up also renovating everything here. And at that time, there was actually Kelle, the old man, and his wife was living here. And just before he died, he and I discussed that we should tear this building down and then build the wood house instead. So, but this particular building is built after the cradle-to-cradle theory. So in theory, you can take everything apart. We haven't used any glue. So you can take off the gypsum from the walls, you can tear down everything, the wood constructions we have in the roof, you can take everything apart. So that is how it's built, like one big Lego house. Of course, we couldn't do it with this, because that was constructed in 1972 and this one in 1992. So here we have renovated as good as we could. We have these carpets everywhere. It has a cradle-to-cradle certification. This has a cradle-to-cradle certification. As long as we could go with that certification, we have done it. We also worked with Velux, as I said, and they wanted to look into their sustainable theory, and that is called the Active House. And that is the big industry in at that time in Europe. And that is a contra thing, you can say, to the passive house from Germany. Because in Germany, when they came up with the passive house, they wanted the walls to be this thick, the windows to be that small, because they didn't want the heat to come in. Of course, Velux didn't like that because they like windows. So that was actually quite jump into another way of thinking sustainability. So that they changed that attitude, made the Active House where you still have the small walls but with insulation in. And here in the northern part of Europe, we really need the light because otherwise we get depressed and everything. So Saint-Gobain is the biggest industrial company doing building materials. They, of course, are part of that also. They do glass. They do the glass itself and sell it to Velux that make the frames. So they were the big partners in Active House. Today, they are all over the world.
So the question posed then was, obviously, Trine was obviously starting to build up a community, both sort of financially and in the environmental sphere. How was it working with all these different groups, all these different individuals, with different ideas and different agendas, I suppose, for what wanted to do?
And then I put all the partners together. Saint-Gobain, Velux, at that time we had Deso from the Netherlands. We had Mosa from the Netherlands. Netherlands are very, very skilled when it comes to sustainable products. They have been working with the cradle-to-cradle theory since the beginning in the late 80s. So we got a lot of products from there. But as far as I could, of course, I bought in Denmark. But we don't have everything. We're a small country. I also had to buy the wood for the wood construction in here in Austria. We don't have forests that big enough to make that kind of material in Denmark. And then I went back to the foundations. Then I said, I have three exams. They're very popular Danish architects. They are all over the world, also in Australia. I don't know whether they are in New Zealand, but I know for sure they are in Australia. And they have this classic Scandinavian architecture, which I like. And so I went back to one of the biggest foundations in Denmark. And I said, now I have three exams. I have Velux, I have Velfax, Saint-Gobain, blah, 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 blah. Okay. And I said, I still need some free money to do some of the renovation here and some of the extras in the sustainability and sustainable solutions. And then they kind of gave up. They laughed in 2009, but I asked for 15 million Danish kroner, and they actually gave me 20. And they said they have never seen that way of putting partnerships behind a new idea. So that is why they gave actually the project 20 million for free.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a lot of money. We needed around 100, 110, and I succeeded in getting 40 million free money just as a gift. And then I got some money from Kalle, some capital from him, not only the building, and the rest was loans from the bank.
Bubble sprite of the forest of Orokanui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, ka mihi arahanui kia koutou, ka tau ahau. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars in your beloved universes. And I hope wherever you are and whatever's happening around you, this moment illuminates for you the power, the beauty, the strength, the unique, precious gifts that you bring to this world that no one else does. Just you. How wonderful. And when we look around us, we see this in every aspect of the living world. Each living being bringing something unique and precious and beautiful into this world. And I talk to you now from a beautiful rainy, rainy day. Very loud rain, which is so nice. And we all know that the rain on the roof, the rain on the corrugated iron is such a beautiful sound, a beautiful music for us to enjoy. And for us all, I know that the last few years have been very tough, and it's so important that we find these moments of clarity and appreciation for the lives that we still have and the lives that we can touch, that we can help, that we can support, which is every life around us that we encounter. And it might be a very small act or a large act, or it might be just sending an intention. But I know that for all of us, we have the unique capacity to love and to give love and share love to those around us, which is so, so, so important. Anyway, I'm not going to, use my time with you to tell you what's important. It's more that I'm so grateful to be alive with you. And while we are here, I want us to feel good. I want us to feel good about who we are. I want us to feel good about the world around us. I want us to see the beauty and the possibility in the world around us. And I want us to act from that place, from that perspective. But of course, everybody is having their own experience. And it's not my right to prescribe anything. So all I would say is thank you. Thank you for being born. Thank you for coming into this world with unique skills and gifts, just like all life. Thank you for the difference that you make in this world. Thank you for the change that you make in this world by being here. Thank you. It's really lovely just listening to the rain. I hope that you're having a peaceful time wherever you are. And whatever's happening around you, I hope you can feel safe and supported and loved by the world. I believe that we are. And how wonderful it is, you know, that we, as a species, we've created these homes, we've created these nests, we've created these castles and queendoms and kingdoms to keep us warm. And here I am in Te Wo Mansion, you know, and I'm nice and warm, and I'm listening to the rain outside. And it's good that we can do this. It's good that we made the human world. It's good that we have both worlds. Anyway, I'm sending out lots of love to you all. I hope that everything's going really well for you. And I hope that you can feel and see the beauty that you possess, that you bring into the world. And I hope that when it is raining and it is cold, that you're nice and warm. And I'll look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. I'm talking with Tim Lynch, who is telling us about his trip to Bornholm, and this time it's Trine Richter from Green Solution House. We heard from the other people on the island about the importance of not just doing a thing, but having a wider societal impact. Did you get that feeling in the hotel as well?
100%. And the thing, from the very inception of the hotel itself, it was integrated into the community in all the different facets. In the conversation I had that I wasn't recorded, she was a little bit more explicit about how that occurred and the importance of those community connections. When I hopped off the ferry, and I can't speak Danish, and I just sort of in mumbled English asked the bus driver, Green Solution House, and he said, yeah, and drove me straight there to the hotel. If that was a Novotel, I don't think it would have been quite the same. And that's the importance that it has within the community.
It's interesting, she started talking at the start about this biodigester and all those sorts of things, but now she seems to be saying that the most important component is the people.
Yeah, and I think the people are the motivator for her. That's the thing that makes the hotel what it is the people and the connection of it. And, she's a big... One of the ethoses of the hotel is this notion of Kaizen or continuous improvement. And I think one of the metrics that she's able to use for, a KPI, if you will, or key performance indicator, is A, in the happiness of the people that work there. But not only that, how much the hotel is able to contribute to the wider community, and both fiscally and also in a sort of non-fiscal fashion.
And sometimes I'm asked, so just don't give me that question, because I was asked by a British journalist who said, do you ever get job offer from other hotels in the world, the people you want to work with you? And I say, yes, I do, but I'm not interested, because what I'm interested, I love my job. But and I think the hotel business is quite funny. But what I really like is to make the change in our society. And you can say, is it more fun to be a big fish in a small lake? I can actually see the results of what I'm doing. And sometimes I make fun of the politicians over here and said, actually, I think I can see what I do with my work. Can you see which result do you get? Because I know I'm not fair, but that's why I like my job. I love to create jobs all year round. I love to see the change in people. We have 15 different nationalities here. Sometimes we had refugees a couple from Syria a couple of years ago when they arrived here. The women, they have never worked before. They come in here. Yes, they start as cleaners, housekeeping. They don't, they walk like this. They don't look you into your eyes. And after a couple of months, they start to smile. They start to lift their chin. They have a good network. They come into our society, and they are so valuable for us. And that's what I like. And I do sustainable buildings, and I run this hotel in a sustainable way. So, but that are the tools to get what I really want. And that is actually some happy people working here all year round. I like to be humble. So you just never know how much, I would say. But I do have numbers, and the numbers are not humble. They're actually quite good. And we know that every time that I have a turnover on 100 kroner, just as an example, I keep 40 kroner and 60 kroner will go out to the society. And that's just the way it is. So it's between, you can add up 2 or 4 times what we do here that has an effect on the society. So the taxes, yeah. You know, when I arrived here, Kalle only had this hotel was open from May to October. He had 10 employees. My father-in-law had at that time 2 hotels, and one was a success, the other wasn't. So today we have, when we have most here, we have 150 employees. And right now I have around, I think I paid salary for 80 employees in December. Not full time, because we don't have that. We do have tourists during the winter time, but the corona made some changes. It's coming back, actually. We had growth in the winter period in 2019, then we had stop, but now we see it again. So so this will get higher now, I know for sure. And we have succeeded in this pattern.
So the idea of sustainability is in the production of this building.
Mm-hmm.
It's embedded in the community.
Yeah. Every time we build, we use contractors here from the island, of course.
Yeah.
Again, numbers. When you build for 100 million Danish kroner, 40 million will go to the salaries for the local contractors. Today they have accepted that Green Solution House is here, and they can actually see the impact on the society. And when I ask people to come here, for example, to meet you, they do. They know now that it's a very, very good idea and part of our branding strategy that as many as possible help us out in the world. Mm-hmm. So today, for example, Velux still, you know, talk about Green Solution House when they are in Asia, when they are in the States, and suddenly, you know, people show up and you just have this, how the hell do you know about Green Solution House? But people do. So, you know, so it has changed. And luckily, I don't believe in luck, actually. But in 2016, 15 or 16, we got a national prize for being the best. The house was the best building project in 2016. And for the first time in the Danish history, we actually got it again in 2021. And that creates, because of the building in there, and that creates new customer, new people who wants to come and see that stupid blonde over there, what she's actually doing. And,
So the idea of cradle to cradle, or using that as a framework to sort of think through, push for some fairly innovative and interesting solutions. So all the pathways around the hotel are covered in glass, which in itself seems quite odd, but it's, once again, it's connections that her, Trine, and the hotel have within the community, allowed to come up with some innovative solutions for the pathways and the coverings that go on.
But the glass, it is a nice little story, because Pernille Bilow, who actually has a glass blowery in Svaneke, she's my best friend.
Right.
And we have approximately children at the same age.
Yeah.
And Sunday afternoon, In 2012, we were sitting many Sunday afternoons drinking tea, looking at our wonderful babies, and talking about how could we develop the island, because that's our interest. So she said that she had so much left over from the glass production. So when you blow a glass, and this is not blown, but fabricated, but you have the tube here. Mm-hmm. And then also when you kick it off, you have a size of this as a waste. Mm. It's impossible to get rid of. It's just a way of how you produce glass. All these small pieces of glass turns into a lot of ton. So at that time, she had approximately 11 tons of glass. And she gave it to me as a Christmas present. And we had to figure out how can we use it. And we have read somewhere about a garden in New York where a private person had tumbled the glass and put it as a cover in the flower beds to you know, get rid of weed. And we thought, could we do the same with this? And how can we then use the glass? And then we came up with this, we just have to tumble it. So I have another friend, and he has a granite company where he crushes granite, but he also makes tiles of granite. Very, very beautiful. You have to come back during summertime, and then I can show you. It's very rough to see it today, but it's very beautiful in summertime. And I asked him, Can we put it into one of your tumblers, so just to see how it works? And that was, it's the true story. We took a bucket of Pernille's glass, this size, put it into this concrete, like you can have in a private, you know, household, and put it into there, and then we tumbled it for an hour. And after an hour, it was soft, actually more soft than granite from the nature, which we use on the streets. Or path more, and then we figure out maybe we can use it instead of is it called asphalt? Is that, you know, what the layer we have out here? Yeah, there are many things in asphalt is not good for the water, so we found a vegetarian, whatever, how to say it, bitumen-free material, a binder that we could use instead. And then we ended up with the paths we have out here. So it's 50% of reused glass, 50% of local granite.
Tim, so far you've talked to a woman running a hotel for 35 minutes without talking about food. That must be a record.
I think so. I couldn't help myself. I had to literally sort of bite my tongue. And then it got to the end, I had to ask her about the food. And I have to say, the food that I had there was fantastic. It was delicious.
We have, there's a certification in Denmark where we look, it's called Øko-mærket. And it's when you have between 30 and 60% organic food in your kitchen, you get the bronze. Mm. When you go from 60, and I think it's up to approximately 90%, then you have the silver. And then when you're almost 100, you get gold in the kitchen. And we have silver. And we will not get gold before the island gets gold. Because when it comes to sustainability, and I'm not saying that it's the right way to do it, but I think it's more sustainable to buy as much local as I can, even though it's not organic. Once I had a club of pensioners. I had 100 people here gathered from the island. That was in 2016, I think, and the average age was 75 or something. And then there was this very, very old woman who asked me, what is this stuff about sustainability? I don't really get it. Can you explain it very simple? And so I did. And I said to her, it's actually, you know, lost knowledge.
So what's the big takeaway from this part of your trip for yourself and for your learners?
Well, there are many. I guess the first thing is, I guess, you know, these guys aren't scared by this notion of change. They're not scared by reimagining what energy resilience looks like. They're not scared by reimagining what the role that a hotel can play within the community. These things aren't threats to them. They're opportunities. Like I was watching a really interesting interview, Jack Tane interview, on Sunday, and he was interviewing a person about infrastructure in Australia. And they said, well, should we be looking to Australia to find out more about our infrastructure requirements and needs? And they said, no, you need to look to the Scandinavians. And it's because of the way they're approaching these things, they're becoming world leaders in a lot of these areas. And I think a lot of it is down to mindset, is down to way you can frame these things for yourself, the way you look at challenges, the way you view change. You know, we all need to look back at our history and we need to sort of hold on to and learn from it. We don't need to be anchored to it, I don't think. And when you walk around places like Copenhagen, they have the old architecture, they're beautiful, amazing buildings, but at the same time, they've been brought into the 20th century. The way they think is in the 20th century, and that's where they want to be.
We've talked to people from about energy. We've talked to people about oil and how that is being oil, as in rapeseed oil, canola oil, and how they're seeing that as a whole system. We talked to somebody from a brewery.
Yep, someone from a brewery. Yep. They talked about how they're using sustainability as a way to make their business more robust, how they were using it as a way to, well, not rather than having one revenue stream, they were able to have multiple revenue streams, and how that in turn is making their business more robust and more strong, and able to weather competition, because as the, you know, they were talking about, you know, it turns out most of Europe also makes quite good beer as well. The Germans, turns out, make pretty tasty beer, and they can make a lot of it very cheaply. So how are you able to put a business in a position where you're able to be financially resilient?
And I think we started talking with somebody from Eternity.
Yep, so that
Emmanuel,
and he was talking about the process that he's gone through of carbon mapping food, and that is a process that I'm about to start at Polytech now. Touch wood, I hope. I've applied for the funding for it to get the funding to get consultants in so we can do a baseline calculation on the carbon outputs from the food produced. And from there, we can start looking at, well, how can we start looking to change our practice, you know, what we do, and not just offset. So, you know, the world doesn't need more pine trees planted. You know, what the world needs is organisations like the Polytech to be looking to the future in the same way that these guys on Bornholm are, and say, well, let's look at how we do things, let's do things differently, but let's not be scared by it. Let's get everyone in the wider Polytech community on board with what we were doing, and let's push things forward on this. So, you know, there's been a lot of things that came over. You know, change is as good as a holiday. I got both of them. I got holiday and I got change.
I think I've asked you before for your go-to definition of sustainability. I'm not going to pretend to remember what it was, but for you, has this trip changed your understanding?
Absolutely. The notion of sustainability, I used to view sustainability through the lens of, well, you know, say farming or food production. The way, after I came back from Bornholm, sustainability for them was this ability of, how are we all going to live in warm houses? How are we all going to be able to get to work on time? And sustainability becoming something which is more to do with like social equity. You know, how do we equitably, you know, distribute power? You know, how do we make sure that even those in amongst our community, our society with the least, are still able to live in a way which is enabling them to contribute to the wider whole? And I hadn't considered that chunk or that cog as part of the sustainable process.
What questions does it leave you?
What am I doing? Like, what am I doing? Like, I, it's, that's honestly, that's what it's left me questioning. It's like, how am I contributing? Yes, at my work, I'm trying to, through my teaching, I'm trying to contribute to change and knowledge and understanding and growth. And I'm trying to do things in the wider, but in my personal life, what am I doing on a daily basis? Particularly after talking to Emmanuel, I've very much looked at my diet. I've started being far more aware of the volumes of carbon-intensive food that the family's consuming. And there's an irrefutable relationship between health and well-being and reducing the amount of carbon-intensive food that you're eating. There's also a cost analysis with it as well. So you're eating better food, which is cheaper. Is it as convenient? No, absolutely not. Is it harder to cook vegetables than sausages? Well, yes, it is. There's just no way around that. But is it better for me? Does it taste better? Does it make me feel better about myself? And does it make the family feel better? 100%.
Let's go out to another music track. Is that another Frisian?
Well, that's for the people that are listening. This, for me, is just a fantastic song. This has got all the bits of a fantastic song. It's got a bass line that sounds like it came straight from Peter Hook. It could be somewhere from the Joy Division playbook. And they've been accused of ripping off Joy Division. And look, is that the worst thing in the world? If you're going to rip off a band, is that the worst band to rip off? This is Fontaine's DC and Television Screens.
You've been listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversation with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, which is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic. We're broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed in podcast on oar.org.nz. I've been talking with Tim Lynch, the last of his adventures around the Baltic Sea. Thank you very much, Tim.
You're welcome.
I'm Samuel Mann. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Marty Wire.
Saw the ice face fail for the first time in years. Underwater levels rise round the television screen. All your tough man looks for which you had reserved. The room full of mirrors at the television screen. At the television screen. At the television screen. On the television screen. They fell as a child on the beat down grass. No pudding, no bruising, not a mark to be seen. So some they come last, as their passions we'll see. Illustrated well by the television screen. Shall we tangle our thinking? Shall we give it a name? Let it sit at the table, bringing it from the rain. I could lay it right down on these lively living streets. Still you'd not know how the city had beat. On the television screen. On the television screen. On the television screen. On the television screen. Cluster of nothing, you have beauty for the sake. How dare you go about living as a relic from a dream? As the sky shutters down on the antiquated scene, on the room full of mirrors, on the television screen, on the television screen, on the television screen. On the television screen. On the television screen.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.